No.
Dude. All right, now we're on. All right, Brandon Chalmers, we had an away mission this weekend.
Yes,
but,
we did.
But before we talk about that, I feel like we need to address some of the nerdy happenings that occurred over the weekend. Nerdy thing number one, Avengers Endgame grossed $1.2 billion with a B dollars the opening weekend.
Yep.
Neither of us have seen it.
No.
So we can't really comment on that. And then
we can comment on the fact that there are Disney employees that are on food stamps.
Fuck, dude.
But they launch a streaming service soon, so I'll be giving them $7 a month, most likely.
Fuck. That's awful. It sucks when you hear, like, on the one thing, it's great because nerdy shit is awesome. But like, people who work for the company that just made a $1.2 billion payday are getting this much of that. That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, capitalism.
Yay!
Nerdy.
All the air out of the room. That's what I'm doing.
Nerdy thing number two, we had the big battle of Winterfell on Game of Thrones.
Right, which I haven't seen, by the way. So
we're not going to spoil it. I will disappoint you. Omar does not show up. So I don't even know if you want to watch it now.
I mean, are they doing? They're doing a prequel, right?
They are doing a prequel series.
Okay, so maybe we find out that like Omar's the Night King.
Hmm.
And that's how he's got those sweet dragon riding skills, is because he spent all those years being a badass on a sea serpent. So, you know, fingers crossed. Plus, honestly, like, if R.R. Martin isn't writing the prequels, right?
No, he's not. So this is all cool. HBO, so
there's a very high chance of HBO using the same actors for things, because they love to reuse people.
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of time before we get, like, what? Steve Buscemi. We get the guy who played Omar. We get Steve Van Zandt, which will be a whole thing.
Ian Michael Shane.
In Michael fucking hell. Oh, man. Because he was on Vikings, which, if you haven't watched, is like low-key Game of Thrones. It's not great, but it's not bad. But yeah, I will genuinely watch Ian Michael Shane in anything. I'm also excited to find out that, like, young Mad King is like Timothy Oliphant or something like that. Like,
that would be great. That would be amazing. So I won't spoil that, but I do want to talk about something that has bothered me and continues to bother me about Game of Thrones. So Jon Snow is always looked at as like this great leader and this great warrior. Kit Harington does not know how to use a sword. And I don't know if that's intentional or if the sword is too fucking heavy, because the Battle of the Bastards, there's this great scene. Jon Snow is in the middle of the field.
And
the horses are coming and he pulls out the sword and it's Valyrian steel, whatever, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And he pulls out the sword and it pulls him with it. And it kind of slunks to the ground. And now there's a, In my mind, that could be like a story beat where it's like he doesn't feel worthy of the blade and so it weighs him down when he uses it.
No way.
But homeboy cannot use a sword. Like, when he swings it like a baseball bat, and it wields him. Like, it, the way he swings it, it's moving him around. So, like, if he's chopping off someone's head, he ends up this way, where his head is leaning forward and is about to get brained. And the fast, you know, like, it bothered me during the Battle of the Bastards, but I chalked it up to him not being the most skilled or being emotional or whatever. But you have the same thing in this era, in this battle, and Homeboy is just like, the sword is just kind of swinging him around back and forth, and it looks real bad.
So let's make a couple assumptions here. I just looked up how physically large Kit Harington is as a human. So let me ask you a question. How heavy do you think that sword is?
It's probably like 3 pounds. Well, if it's Valyrian steel, so it's magic metal, so it should be light as fuck. But the stunt sword is probably like a couple of pounds.
Okay. So apparently Kit Harington is 5'8 and approximately 170 pounds.
Okay.
So that is large enough to handle a weapon.
I would assume so.
I would assume so, because Jamie, you stand what?
I'm 5'6".
Okay, I didn't know you were quite that short.
5'6", 180, I can handle a sword. But my swords are katanas, and katanas are shorter than a broadsword. But I've held a broadsword, and I don't feel like the broadsword is swinging me around when I'm using it.
Yeah.
So, homie, like,
wasn't he kind of a douche and used a broadsword with like one hand?
Yeah. But then he goes in, but it's like swinging like a baseball bat. And as he swings it, his body's going this way, leaving him open. If he's swinging this way, his body's open this way. And it's just like.
So let's clarify a couple things. One, I have a feeling that he just genuinely spent a lot of time in the gym looking good, but probably didn't spend quite as much time as Arya did with the swordplay background sort of thing. Now, there's an argument to be made that when he swings the sword during the Battle of the Bastards, he's fucking exhausted. So
true.
Him swinging the sword like that and leaving himself open to attack, that's always been part of kind of Jon Snow, at least in my experience, or at least in my reading of the situation, of his whole thing is like, he's the rightful yada yada. He's already dead. He can't really be killed. He's focused on the one thing. And also, movie rules apply. Two people are not running up on Jon Snow with like ball peen hammers and cap guns. Like,
yeah.
Everyone else is bothered with everyone else.
I mean, he does get plot armor, so I get that. I just,
right.
The way he physically moves is inelegant. And then you see the actor who plays Jorah Mormont. I just call him Jorah Mormont.
Jorah Mormont, I think.
Jorah Mormont. Yeah. He moves well with the sword. Like, and he's supposed to be like, he's supposed to be like one of the best knights who was exiled for whatever.
He's swarthy and he's British. Well, that's true. Also, let's bear in mind, Sean Bean isn't exactly great with a sword either.
Right.
Like, even kid version of his dad of Stark wasn't great with a sword.
That's true.
Starks kind of suck at fighting.
Yeah. I mean, if that's part of the character, then it is being portrayed very well, because
I don't know if it's part of the character, but I have a feeling it wasn't a priority when everything was happening. It's not like Jaime or, you know, anyone else. It's not like Jaime's right hand, the guy who helped Tyrion, who's supposed to be super fucking smooth and great with a sword and really capable and yada yada yada.
Yeah.
He's bad with a sword. He's meant to be quick-witted and quick with a blade and whatever it is. I think Jon Snow is just a dorky Luke Skywalker of Game of Thrones.
He really is.
Up until more recent movies, Luke sucked.
Yeah.
Like, even quote-unquote badass Jedi Luke was really kind of weak sauce. Like, didn't do a whole lot with the blade. Had a ton of presence in a cloak.
Yeah.
But it's not like everybody goes, holy fuck it. Like, if Luke and Darth Maul got in an elevator together, Luke is fucking dead.
Yes. Gone. Right. Gone.
Yeah.
Getting that other hand chopped, the head gone.
Yeah. So I think realistically, you're going to have to let it go. Also, nobody named Kit is badass with a sword.
and I realize that I need to let it go.
That's just a plot point. Like, if I ever got in an argument with some dude in traffic and I found out his name was Kyle, I'll take my chances. Like, I just life rule. The good chance you have soft parents, you grew up, getting taken to soccer practice, and there's a better than average chance I could probably break your face. I'm going to take my shot. Yeah. So Kit, I think, falls under that same soft name sort of thing. Your Kits, your Kyles, your Tuckers, your Brents, mm-hmm. your – yeah.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that bothers me is that – I haven't read the books. It just seems to me that Valerian's deal should have some kind of, I mean, people are always in awe of Valerian's deal, that like the people who wield it, it should be easier to wield, but that's just me armchair quarterbacking a series and complaining about the fight choreography, which is not a storytelling element at all. Like, you know,
reality is, if you're a derp with a sword, giving you a lighter sword doesn't make you less of a derp. It just makes you a faster one.
That's true.
I'm not a big Kid Harington fan. I got to be honest with you. I like his dog. His dog's rad.
Yeah.
Ghost is pretty cool. That's about it.
Ghost is great. They need to do more with the dogs.
Yeah.
Dragons are cool, but the dogs are cool too.
Yeah, I remember reading Fractions Hawkeye, and when they had the pizza dog issue, if we could just have like one of the flashback episodes is just from the dog's perspective, we tell the story.
Pizza Direwolf.
Yeah, Pizza Direwolf.
All right, so that's all we're going to touch on in terms of the geeky shit. We missed out hanging out with Dave Bautista over the weekend at the theater. Because we just didn't fucking have time to go to the theater.
Yeah, honestly, hang on a second. Can we touch on something real quick regarding that?
Oh, sure.
So there were a bunch of WWE people, and in Dave's case, former WWE people, who just went to AwesomeCon. Dave, in that sense, went to go see the movie at the Chinatown Theater, relatively local to where he grew up in D.C., with a bunch of fans. And that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And I want to see more people of that level, of your Xavier Woods, of your Zelina Vegas, of your, you know, of your Dave Bautistas, especially not being afraid to kind of interact with fans and give everybody a fun experience. That is the sort of thing that they're going to talk about forever.
Yeah.
2 years ago, you know, like 2 years ago, standing at Starbucks, WWE superstar Christian was there. I just randomly, you know, like I saw him, I noticed him, he noticed me noticing him. I thanked him for, you know, making my teenage and childhood years awesome. Uh-huh. He thanked me, and then we just struck up a conversation. He probably won't remember it ever.
Yeah.
But there was a good 15 minutes where I got to chat with somebody who I fucking idolized when I was a teenager and found out the dude was rad. And it was one of those, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call him a hero at any point, but it was a very cool experience that, like, dude who has no real reason to be cool to me was really cool to me. And that's a fun thing that sticks with you. I hope that there are other people of that level who know how much those interactions mean to people. And I'd like to believe that WWE people understand it probably a lot more than others because get a lot more fan interaction. But I hope that starts wearing off to some of the other stars that are there, you know, your Chris Evans, your Anthony Mackies, your whomever.
Yeah.
Getting a chance to kind of hang out with people.
I feel like the younger I feel like the younger generation of stars coming up feels that because they started out as fans. Like Xavier Woods, he goes to MAGFest to MAGFest. Like he's not there promoting anything or like shooting a show or anything. He's there to enjoy MAGFest. Like he came to AwesomeCon to fucking hang out with nerds.
Right.
And so, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Dude is rad. So I really want to see more of that. That's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, I took you off your point.
Oh, no. So we both went on an away mission to AwesomeCon this past weekend. Yep. Started Friday afternoon. You picked me up.
Yes.
We had to drop by the offices, some office building, to pick up some stuff. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about that yet.
I would probably hold off on that then, in that case.
Yeah. But it was raining. We got the rig to the con. We got it checked into our hotel, and then we decided it's going to be a while for us to do our show. Let's explore the city.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember the sequence of events. So we did stop by the Leica store. We're going to circle back to the Leica store at the end of this. But so we went to the Leica store, hung out, went to the convention. And then we were sitting at our table. And then was it the kids show that happened first?
Yes, the kids show happened first. We had a really fun experience. They were doing AwesomeCon Junior, which was a stage that was in the main dealer room. So all the kids had some other events. There were like giveaways and stuff like that, which was really cool. We ended up doing a show where, simple thing, one match, but we got kids involved in the match, so we had them do a tag team bout alongside an art fighter. So it was it was Lightning Lev. It was a young kid named Lev who was like maybe 7 or 8 years old.
Fun.
And then there was a girl, and I swear her name was Sierra, but she wanted it was great. Like I asked her, like, what do you want me to call him? And, like, I immediately just called Lev Lightning Lev because I have Stevie Speed. I'm thinking fastest team in art fight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, go along with it. He fell in love with it immediately. I see her look at me and she goes, wait, can I have a wrestler name? And I said, yeah, whatever you want. Sky's the limit. And she goes, she, like, looks at me kind of half cocky and goes, Ladybug. And I'm like, Ladybug? And she, I swear to God, Jamie, she goes, yeah. Remember that, Ladybug. And I was like, hell yeah.
Remember
just hit her
that.
With a high five. I turned back, and she's tag teaming alongside the Princess of Darkness, Killer Colleen.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, Colleen, meet Ladybug. And Colleen's like, I love Ladybugs. And immediately those two bonded, and they were off like a shot. It was freaking great.
Oh, my God. That's so,
the show
so
was
great.
Awesome. Yeah, it was really fun. Show was awesome. It was neat having kids there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I really like doing the thing with kids because it forces me to be more creative because I can't make inappropriate jokes.
You
and
can't
I also
work blue.
You can in a way, though, because like all good cartoons, you're writing jokes for two audiences.
True, true.
And You can basically 1-2 punch things where you do the joke for the kid, and then while the kid's laughing, you like gut shot the parent just to see if you can get a fun reaction out of them. So it was great seeing these kind of like getting these opportunities to hit the kids with a joke, and I hear them kind of snicker, and then the tone of the laughter changes when I do the follow up afterward.
Yeah, yeah,
hell of a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
It was really neat. It was fun to see. It was a nice reminder that you should probably put an age limit on the kids that you have doing a thing. Lev was super rad and he was sweet and he was ready to do the thing. But there's a lesson that maybe some previous art fighters had a little trouble learning, that you can't scribble over other people's art.
Yes.
That's just a rule.
Yeah.
So it unfortunately took his dad showing up to teach him that rule. But I was really excited to have Lev be part of the thing.
Sounds great. I'm sad I missed it.
To Ladybug's credit, by the way, she was absolutely patient. Could not have been kinder to Lev. Come to find out, I had a conversation with her after where I complimented her, and she said that she was actually a babysitter, so she had experience with it. She was like 14.
Nice.
Yeah. And Lev, of course, won because the kids are going to pick the younger kid. But I definitely let Ladybug know that she should try and reach out to us about doing some other things.
Yeah,
because she was super sweet. And I think she had a really good time.
Oh, that's rad.
It was a really cool experience of doing the thing. Like, I don't know if I would want to do more than maybe two matches. I think you'd end up losing the kids.
But oh, definitely. Yeah.
It was a heck of a lot of fun to do like a 20-minute match with the kids, cycling through everything and giving them an opportunity to draw. And I swear, like, they were more on the canvas than the actual art fighters were. And it was cool seeing the collaboration going on where it was like, you know, Ladybug would look back at Colleen and go, what am I doing next? And she's and like, you hear Colleen shouting, legs, put legs on it quick. And like Steven starts to run in to try and put legs on it. And you see Ladybug like throw a hip at him.
Oh, nice.
Jockey for position.
That's great.
So yeah, it was
sounds like a natural.
Oh, she was a total natural for it. But you know, it was one of those, like, we were looking for art fighters. Lev was sitting in the audience half an hour before we got started. I couldn't not pick him. He was the only kid in the audience when we first showed up.
Yeah.
Ladybug, I mentioned on stage, hey, there's one spot open, and I see her from like, I don't know, good 50, 60 feet back, like almost dislocate her shoulder to throw her hand up, like, oh, I want to do the thing. I want to do the thing. And it was like, kid, cool, let's do the thing. Luckily, she's a pretty decent artist too.
That sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, so that was a hell of a lot of fun. Then we followed that up. Thank you, by the way, Jamie Noguchi, for being stuck at table duty.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then we followed it up with doing Unleashed.
Unleashed is our 18-plus show where we take topics from Cards Against Humanity. Humanity's Cards Against Humanity. And that's usually fucked up shit.
Yeah, that's pretty fair assessment of everything. As one Marty Day likes to put it up on stage, if you've ever been playing Cards Against Humanity and you have that mental visual of whatever the card is, we're going to make that. And then we're going to make it again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
So that is a heck of a lot of fun. And also the whole added of if you guys haven't seen it Unleashed, instead of a respin, our artists get combos. So if you get one terrible thing and then you get another terrible thing like a windmill full of corpses and Bill Clinton bare naked on a bearskin rug. You got to just put those two things together and make yourself a turducken of love. That's your job now.
The thing about the Unleashed shows is that the artwork always looks better. It just always does.
That's the whole thing with it is also it's collaborative as opposed to competitive. There's no real winners at Unleashed because we all are subject to all of this. So seeing the artists work together on really messed up stuff and create some of my favorite moments where I'll see one of you drawing something and I'll be talking to Marty about something or I'll be hanging back because Marty and Ross are on commentary. And then I'll see one of the two of you start bursting out laughing and then you'll step back and the rest of the audience suddenly takes in what sort of terrible is about to happen. And then inevitably I'll see one of you go, ooh, and then you unsheath a marker like fucking Voltron and the blazing sword. Right. And then usually either fire or blood or some sort of other bodily fluid ends up coming in. And I listen to the crowd go, ha, 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 oh God, no. Ooh.
it's so good.
Yeah.
Let's see, dinner that first night was
ramen place.
Yeah, there was a ramen place open really late. Everyone had dumplings and stuff. It was really good.
Yeah, dumplings were real good. It was a very Asian and heavy food weekend for at least for dinners.
Yeah, that's true.
Though I'm not complaining because I don't think other than the ridiculously overpriced cheesesteak I had at the con. Kids, look, I'm used to prices being higher, right? A cheesesteak and a bottle of water, no fries,
no fries,
no peppers and onions or anything else like that. No fries. Just a cheesesteak and a bottle of water was $17.
$17?
$17.
Was it the best cheese steak you've ever had?
No. admittedly, it was not bad for con food.
Right.
But Jesus Christ. Like,
my God.
Wow.
My God.
So, yeah. Ugh. Anyway. I know the convention has nothing to do with that. I know that's the DC Convention Center and their staff and what have you. And
yeah.
While the staff members that were working there, both everybody at concessions and everyone manning a door in a windbreaker, were absolutely kind this weekend. I don't want to shit all over any of them, but Jesus Christ, could we just make it a little more affordable? Just a little bit.
That's not right.
Yeah.
That's not right.
No.
So next day, that was Saturday. That was our first full day.
Yes.
We kind of took our time getting out of bed since I wasn't tabling this year.
Yes.
You weren't necessarily tabling either.
Nope.
So we went to some fancy like bagel place or coffee shop.
Yeah, so there was a place that's over by the hotel. We stayed at the Grand Hyatt.
Yeah.
A stone's throw from there in between the Grand Hyatt and the convention center was a place called Dolcezza.
Yeah.
Which
near
was
really, like Louis Vuitton and all these fancy upscale restaurants.
Bougie as fuck.
Yeah, dude.
But surprisingly reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. And the staff were incredibly friendly. Like, to give anyone an idea, a latte, a coffee, and a bagel with cream cheese was $9.50. So
Starbucks prices.
That's Starbucks prices, right? And that's not even like hotel Starbucks prices. That's like regular Starbucks prices. So yeah. And the staff were incredibly kind, and it was a really nice experience in there. So breakfast was pretty good.
Yeah.
We gallivanted off to the con to kind of check in, say hi to everybody, see what's going on. And then you and I went on an adventure of photography.
So around the convention center, if you go a little north, and a little west, there's a couple of neighborhoods that used to be like industrial parks or like carriage houses or ye olde carriage houses or stuff, just, you know, stuff that wasn't being used at all. So a bunch of hipsters bought everything up and put in like a fancy coffee shop and a couple of fancy design studios and some housing and all that kind of stuff. So it's off the beaten path. Like if you don't go down these alleys, you won't get to where we were going.
Yeah, it is. It is very hidden, and it has a really weird feel by the rest compared to the rest of DC. It's got this very kind of old world colonial feel, brick streets, brick buildings. It feels like a very intentionally created sort of community area that you would expect. Like, oh, this is where the baker is, and next to the baker is the blacksmith, and next to the blacksmith is the yada yada. Like, it felt a very like shopkeep kind of area where, you know, all the houses were around, and then you all went into the center of town, and this felt like the very like hustle bustle turn of the century ish kind of center of town. And having that little smattering also of really cool murals and then redone face fronts of some of these places where it's like, oh yeah, there's this really cool like old Victorian style brick building, and then on like another side street, there is what looked like it was the front of that, had like a big opening for what was like a garage door, or like barn doors or something like that. And then was basically like painted or refinished in a different way and had a very like modern chic kind of look to it. So it was almost like there were these moments of like dropping in modern day culture into this like Victorian sort of thing. So it was this really kind of clash of cultural and design features, and it was a very cool experience going back there.
It's pretty fun. There's also a couple of restaurants. There's one restaurant that we passed by that you can't tell it's a restaurant because it's just the side of a building. But if you like, you go down the alleyway and through a doorway, it opens up and it's this fancy schmancy bar. It wasn't open by the time we were there.
That's all right.
But if you follow any DC photographers, you'll inevitably see a shot of that love mural, the rainbow colored love mural on the side of these garage doors. And there's like a curated
outdoor museum that somebody put together. So that's why there are all these fancy murals out there and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a URL, like if you took a photo of it and stuff. But I always like to walk around there during my lunch break because it's unexpected. They're fun things to see, and it's just, I don't know, it is kind of a clash. Like, you don't expect this to be in DC at all.
Yeah, and it also, it removes a lot of the, like, city street, then try not to get hit by a cab, then yada yada. Like, yeah. it feels intentionally off the beaten path. It's a little bit of sanctuary in a very hustle-bustle kind of city.
Yeah. And then lunch was tacos at Del Sol. I don't remember. It's one of the two.
At Honda Del Sol.
Yeah. But it's by far one of the most affordable places in that area.
Yeah.
Like, the tacos were amazing. They were playing soccer on the TV. It was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good. I got blackened fish. I got spicy chicken. And then I got steak.
Yeah.
What did you end up getting?
The pibil, which is marinated pork, chorizo, and steak.
Yeah.
So good variety. They had the green sauce, which is hot as fuck.
Yeah, was not prepared for that because there's no heat up front, and then all of a sudden it's like, welcome to Thunderdome. And it was like, whoa, okay, hang on a second. Who locked the doors?
It's great. They don't tone it down for the white people. They're just like, you're coming to our place, we're going to fuck you up.
That was super nice.
Yeah. And then we had to go back because I had a panel at 2. The diversity or death panel, where we talk about diversity in comics and why it's important. And then things that need to die. I inevitably always drop an F-bomb or 5.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. So that was pretty good. I think at some point you went back to the hotel just to relax and chill, because conventions can be kind of too much sometimes.
Well, I also made the dumb mistake of forgetting to grab everything that we needed for the show of the hotel room. So, you know, there are things that you need, that Art Fight needs to run the show. Wheel of Death, cash box for the merch table. We've got a new style marker that we're using that has like legit ink in it. They're like the refillable style paint pens. So we had a new carry case for that. So I threw all that stuff in a duffel bag, and I didn't want to leave it in the event that like my personal laptop gets stolen or the cash box gets raided or the markers get knocked over and spill ink everywhere. Excuse me. So I thought those are the sort of things that I should probably take back to the hotel. Mm-hmm. So I took them back after the show Friday night, forgetting about the idea of like, oh, I wasn't thinking that, hey, I should probably bring this with me when we go to the actual con and drop everything off. So I ended up having to double back to the hotel to go get it. And in turn, it was the best move I could make, because then I got what was about an hour and a half to kind of decompress, watch TV, take a breath. Yeah, like it was one of those like, all right, I need to get back to the thing and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like walking toward the elevator and I stopped and I was like, wait, I don't have to go anywhere right now. It's like 3:00. I don't have to go anywhere until like, I don't know, let's say 4:30, 5-ish, you know, give or take. So I was like, well, hell, I'm going to go get a Snickers bar and a coffee, and I'm going to go upstairs to the room and just go watch TV and decompress for a little while. It's like,
so awesome.
This is the best idea ever. Yeah. So then hauled all the crap back, and then we got prepped for a regular Art Fight, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of the things that I absolutely love doing when we go to cons is getting a prop and then adding it into the show. We had done this previously. Was it an Awesome Con as well, where we bought the Kevin Sorbo standee, or was that Otakon?
I wasn't there, so it must have been Otakon.
Okay. Yeah. So in previous times, I walked by these comic booths, and I see random things that I'm like, I don't know why you're selling this, but if it's reasonable, I'll buy it on a whim. And they had a Kevin Sorbo from Hercules standee for like, I don't know, $12 or something like that. And I was like, we're expensing this because we're going to give this away at the show. So I made the decision that we were going to take it, and I ended up spending the rest of the day taking photos with it, having people take selfies with it.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
And then we gave it away at the last match. So this time, Marty Day spun a prize wheel at some random booth involving, I think, a local library or something like that, and he ended up winning a copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen
DVD.
Yeah. So I made the immediate decision once he brought it back to the table that we were giving this away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no longer just going to be The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen DVD. It was going to be a signed copy of The Bourne Ultimatum.
Bourne Ultimatum.
Yeah.
On widescreen
DVD. Yeah.
You got to get the timing right. Sorry, we haven't worked this out.
No, it's okay. There's a delay here, and there's also years of experience of working off each other. Marty and I have been simpatico. I've known the guy 20 years. We can finish each other's sentences at the same time.
Well, that's gross.
Yes, it is. So it was one of those things where I made the decision as we were getting up there. I just like spitball with Marty, and I'm like, hey, so I've got an idea of how we determine this. We'll do it the last match. We'll tell everybody it was predetermined at another show, and then we'll tear into everything. So we got started. We explain, you know, welcome to Super Arbitrary, yada, yada, yada. Explain what the show is, yada, yada, yada. And then I stop the show in its tracks, and I say, Marty Day, we have a very, very special event happening today. The main event of the evening. Not only will we crown a champion of most awesomeness of Awesome Cons Awesome, but we will give away this signed copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen
DVD.
There it is. All right. So, so I continued to hammer it home. And every time you say in unison The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen DVD. Yeah. Every time the audience gets more and more into this idea. So by the time we got to the main event match, we had Two Drink Alex and the Princess of Darkness Killer Colleen there, and they decided to pick audience members to fight for to win this copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen
DVD.
Yep. So there was Killer Colleen picked a gentleman named Evan, who was also a really good sport during Unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
And Two Drink Alex manages to pluck a delightful redheaded woman out of the audience. And she walks up and I say, hey, how's it going? What's your name? She looks at me with the kindness in her eyes. And in the most genuine way she can, she says, Mirka. And I pause and I say, no, really, what's your name? And she says, Mirka. I said, your parents named you Mirka? And she said, yes. And my only response is, well, in that case, USA, USA. And in turn, because we're all wrestling fan Muppets, the second two or three people start saying USA slowly, we all want to be involved in an 80s action movie, and everyone starts chanting USA. So now we're not just fighting to be crowned the most awesomeness, awesome person of AwesomeCon. We're not fighting for this signed copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen
DVD.
We're fighting for America. And if two hipsters, one that's supposed to be a witch, one supposed to be a drunk guy fighting over a widescreen DVD for America, isn't the best example of how great we can be as a country, I don't know what is.
Agreed.
Pack me up, throw me in the back of an Uber and take me to Canada, because I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So the match happened. It sure was a thing. It went really well. America won, of course. The thing that I forgot to mention is when we mentioned signed copy, what I actually mean is Marty Day and I both signed the copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen DVD.
That's funny.
That's right. So somewhere along the way, there's a delightful woman named Mirka with a signed copy of The Bourne Ultimatum on widescreen DVD. With a story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, that's the highlight of the show. Like, that's the best event of the show.
Yeah, like, we can only pop that that random product placement nut once a show.
Yeah.
But I do love doing it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's awesome.
The only thing I wish we would have done was taken a little more time to build that up. But when Marty Day and I are put under pressure, we will deliver. And I am proud of that moment.
Yeah. It was great. And I can't believe we got, like, America. That's just amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Frankly,
I hope she's lying to me, because I really do. But if she's not, God bless you, America.
Yeah.
God
Hell
bless
yeah.
you.
Hell yeah.
God bless America.
So Saturday evening, we get done. There was a hint of an idea to form the Avengers and avenge our fallen comrades. But we decided that an 11 o'clock showing was stupid.
Yeah.
And so we decided to get dinner instead. We ended up at a sushi bar. I decided that I needed to eat a boat of sushi.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy, I have logistical questions about the boat. Now, I understand the idea of the boat being that you take the boat to get sushi, therefore having sushi delivered in a boat is both ironic and really impressive looking.
Sure, sure.
There's a lot of accoutrement that goes with, like, it's not a boat, it's a boat. Like,
it's a big ass boat.
Yeah, like, they bring out what I can only describe as the equivalency of, like, one of those Longaberger baskets. Like, there's some craftsmanship went into this delivery system.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I gotta believe, like, wood's porous.
Yeah.
Not that I would be concerned about it per se, but I gotta believe there's not the biggest market for making sushi boats.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I don't remember if there were shiso. Yeah, I don't remember. Sometimes they'll put shiso leaf on the bottom.
There was definitely not. It was bare wood.
It was bare wood. Okay, because I don't remember. Because halfway through it, I got the sushi sweats, and I was like, ugh.
Man than I.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good question. I'm just assuming that there was some kind of lacquer, because the sushi didn't stick to the bare wood.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just more of a curiosity thing, and realizing that, like, you order something that has to be placed on the table sideways. Now, I'm aware that in most cases, I think it's supposed to sit between two people.
Sure.
And that they're supposed to share that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's supposed to be for the entire table, not just for one person.
Right. So, but you know, you went full Titanic.
Yeah.
Went full on clean boat club. So I'm proud of you.
I didn't get the two hand rolls. So I failed my family.
I don't think you failed anyone. Like, to be honest with you, you looked that lady right in the eye and said, "I'll take the boat." And she looked at you and you went, "For me." Like, she wanted to ask the question, who will you be sharing it with? Mm-hmm. And before she even had the opportunity, you just followed up with, "For me."
Yes.
No hesitation.
Yes.
No questioning.
Yeah.
And I love that she took a look at everyone at the table and was both impressed but also not surprised by your statement, which I don't know what that says. Like, in all fairness to reality, she did look immediately at me like, "You get the boat too." And I think there's a little bit of disappointment where it's just like, the fat guy's got to get the boat, right? Like, there's got to be two boats.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, you housed it. And that's what friends are for, Jamie. We're here to help you with roles at the end.
Yeah.
Also, I can't believe you made a rookie mistake by eating salad before.
I don't know what I was thinking. I was just like, "Oh, it'll the acid will help prepare me for the thing," and blah blah. And it turned out that the miso and the salad just took up valuable hand roll space.
Like, yeah,
I could have gone through one of those hand rolls.
if I didn't do that shit.
I think you could have done both of those hand rolls, especially without the miso, because you had warm broth sitting in the bottom of your tum-tum.
Yeah.
And then you were piling fish in there.
Yeah.
You're essentially just cooking everything in your tummy. So I think at that point, you were already messing with some stuff. Science had gone out the window at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm constantly reminded of a Simpsons quote, you don't win friends with salad, and you don't eat boats with salad either. I think that's a key thing for us to remember.
Yeah.
When trying to eat a boat, skip the salad.
Yeah, next time I will know, don't bother with the miso, don't bother with the salad, just give me the raw. And I'll just shove it in my face.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that or you double down and you ask her how much to skip the miso and salad and switch it for dumplings and just really just fuck with her shit.
No substitutions. No.
Nah.
That's fine. I need this.
Put that shit on. Then put that shit on the side and give me an order of dumplings. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I need it all to come out at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, because, well, more importantly, Jamie, just for the visual, because I need a boat and then I need the safety dinghy. I need a dumpling dinghy is what I need. I need that little dumpling dinghy just hanging off the back like a little tugboat, just ready to push everything along. Like, I can't take any more raw fish. Hello, dumplings.
Yeah.
Look at you. You delicious little bowels of love.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, that would have been great. So there were some rumblings about maybe extending the evening with some bar hopping or some room parties and stuff, but we ended up going back to the room and watching Forged in Fire.
That sure is a show.
You don't like metal work, Brandon?
Honestly, it's not even that bad. I think it's that there is something inherently it bothers me deep down to my core when we get to these reality shows that are chaired by a 3-person panel, like, because I start to question the credibility, and I've watched enough Chopped that I'm like, no, I know who this is. Fucking Marcus Samuelson shows up, I know that man is down to clown. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Iron Chef Alex Guarnaschelli shows up, I know what she's got. These three dudes, one of which had the wispiest of like steampunk mustaches.
Yeah.
I equally trust them because I take a look at any guy who tucks his polo into his cargo pants as, yeah, he probably knows something about knives. Not a whole lot about love, but a lot about knives.
Well, that guy is a historic weapons expert. So he's done the research about like historic builds and like all the Renfests and all that kind of stuff.
Good
and
for
like
him for being the one person to go to college for that and actually pay off his loans.
Yeah.
Like that's gotta feel good. Like, yeah, I got that TV money. Get ready. Yeah.
And then the guy on the right is a Kali expert. So Kali martial arts, they use a lot of knives in that style. And then the guy on the left, he's not the regular judge, but it's him or a master smith. But the current guy that they had, the Irish guy, he'd won the competition twice before. So he's a smith himself. So he knows what's possible in the time allotted for all the competitors and stuff.
Okay, fair enough. Like there's, you know, this goes along with something else that you had taken me down a rabbit hole of like chopping competitions on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I realized like this Forged in Fire thing and the chopping competitions. And I realized that like I'm into some white shit. But sometimes, Jamie, you're into some real white shit, like inadvertently some white shit, because it's obsessed with the knives and blades of super not white culture. But
sure,
it's very funny when you see the dude with like the utility kilt. Or he's like, yeah, you know, I'm a special weapons expert, you know, self-taught, though. It's a lot of internet research. Spend a lot of time. Got a lot of swords at home. And it's like, I wasn't aware that they let you drill that many holes into your apartment wall to hang your fucking Kingslayer sword there, Brent.
I mastered the blade.
I swear to God, it looks like every, like, these dudes look like every, like, edgelord video that you see, mm-hmm. or some dude who looks like he's real good at fucking up a bag of Funyuns, but he's holding, like, two katanas, and he's chopping, like, refilled Faygo bottles full of water. I forget what fucking, there's some video that I saw where this dude, and I shouldn't judge other fat guys, but this dude looked like you and I taped together, and he was in his best YouTube sweats, and he had like what looked like Renfest braces. It was like the leather gauntlet things with like the rope, but like you could tell they were size medium because it only kind of covered like a Swatch watch top part, and mm-hmm. then that rope stretched so tight across the back of his arm. Oh yeah, yeah. It looked like trying to shoehorn his way into those fishnets, and then him basically taking like what you would find on ThinkGeek or something like that, where it was like two of the zombie slayer swords that you know can't do anything.
Right.
Like, forgive me, master. And then would just fucking destroy some water bottles. Like, the absolute best mascot for why you shouldn't use single-use plastic. Because this edgelord is coming for you. Like, get ready, Karen. Put down that package of Deer Park water, because Kenneth, the edgelord, is coming out of the fog, breathing heavy, and is ready to cut down some bottles. Hold on. Throw the bottle in the air. I caught it. I'll tell you. Okay. Yeah. You gotta throw it better. Underhand. And like, Jesus. So
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
so
yeah, see yeah.
these dudes on this sort of thing. Like, on the one hand, I am absolutely blown away with the idea of dudes take random bit of metal, heat and beat the fuck out of other bit of metal, turn into big shiny thing that cuts wild boar in half.
Yeah, that was cool as fuck.
Like, honestly, that's the most impressive part. They should honestly, like, quick montage all of the building footage and just go in with a large amount of, like, they go down a gauntlet where they just hand your blade to different dudes who are different experts in things, and just this laundry list of things for them to cut in half. Like, okay, so we've got this Rocky Balboa slab of frozen beef. We've got a 1976 Brett Baer rookie card.
Brandon.
We've got this 2004 Honda Civic front bumper.
Brandon, they do that show on that channel. And it
do
is
they?
It is hosted by one Bill Goldberg.
Of course it is.
It's called Forged in Fire, Knife or Death.
Okay. And it's just what? Them quick building things and then just a hackathon.
Oh, no, it's straight up a hackathon. It's an obstacle course where you hack stuff to pieces.
See that? That looks like, that sounds like something I'd be into.
Yeah.
Hosted by a former wrestler, still white as hell, but a little bit of showmanship.
Yeah.
Because that was the problem with those chopping videos that you showed.
Yeah.
I cannot bring myself to make someone in a, like, what I can only describe as a church parking lot with a lot of 2x4s stacked up.
Yeah.
Really impressed. Like, when they're doing the, like, hack this 2x4, then this water bottle, then hit the quick release and chop this tennis ball, then this golf ball.
Yeah.
Then run and try and cut down this baby doll. And it's like, for what? For time? For completion?
Next time we do this, I'll get some of the people? Yeah, I'll get some of these and I'll show it to you. And I think this is much more what you would be interested in, because they have like a whole setup. It's a whole studio. They gotta chop like obstacles as they're flying at them. They gotta do it. It's a lot of fun.
Can we do this? the next time one of those random events, like one of these chopping events or like some random like off the beaten path sport pops up somewhere around us, me, you, your buddy Johnny, we go down and we just go take photos and really see what the sport is all about.
Hell yeah. It's
somebody who flies in from Scotland to perform in this like TGI Fridays parking lot. I don't know who's paying for it. I don't know if he went out of pocket. Like the idea of someone getting on a plane, checking a bag with a easily 12 to 16 inch knife and going, all right, then let's do it. Gotta go to America. That's right. Hello, Tennessee. I'm prepared to crush me enemies.
Do it. Do it.
That's right. Go ahead. Throw the water bottle. Actually, you know what? I realize I'm getting back to the same gig. It's the same edgelord, just with a better accent, and sure. I'm immediately accepting.
I'm much more interested in that myself, you know?
See? Yeah, I think that's it. It's, you know what it is, Jamie? It's a difference in between the dude who's going to chop the stuff in the parking lot. That dude, once again, cargo shorts, tucked in polo, may have a huge gut, but has his uniform high and tight. Mm-hmm. I need somebody who has real pockets and a button on his pants.
Yeah.
I can't take you seriously if you're in sweatpants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm here for it.
I
don't know where you find these events, but it sounds like a great thing to try.
It's got to be somewhere. By the way, if you ever want to actually kill me, break into my house, but be wearing sweatpants. I genuinely, like, gun in hand, machete in hand, will not take you seriously, you low-rent Walmart-ass Jason Voorhees. I won't be worried about you. I'm relatively convinced a strong strike from a pillow. And you're like, stop fucking hitting me. I'll leave.
Okay, so we fell asleep. Sunday happened. Sunday, you know, we did our panel show.
It was the card game. It was fun. We had a bunch of kids come up. Yeah, people were funny.
It was fine. Then we went home. So, saving this for last because it was by far, it was a short encounter, but it was kind of a highlight of the weekend, I think. Friday, after we parked the car, walked all those damn stairs because the fucking elevator was out. We passed by the Leica store and I was like, we have to stop in the Leica store.
Because you should probably clarify for people who aren't camera people what Leica is.
So Leica is a, I think it's a German brand.
Yes.
And they are like the Cadillac of cameras, the Ferrari of cameras.
Yeah. I was going to say Cadillac is not a fair assumption. They are the Bugatti of cameras.
They're the Bugatti of cameras. They are the Paul Reed Smith of cameras.
Yeah, when you talk in top tier, expensive as hell, sort of like, even with fuck you money, I'm not sure if I'd spend it because I'd be like, for that? Really?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, if you talk to anybody who knows anything about cameras and you talk about Red Dot, you know you're talking about a Leica. Like, that's their branding, just the Red Dot. You see the Red Dot on the camera, it's a Leica, and your pants fall down because, you know. But they have a shop in D.C., and I've passed by it a bunch of times and I've been too nervous to go inside. And this time I have that old screw mount Leica lens off of my grandfather's camera. I thought I would bring it in to ask if it's too tight or if it needs some servicing or how to get it serviced or whatever. And so I convinced Brandon and Marty to come with me to go into this Leica store. Now, I was wearing pretty much what I'm wearing now, except I had a different sweater. Or a different hoodie. So I look like a out of work hipster artist hobo off of the street.
You say that, but every fucking photo that I see of Mark Cuban when he's not on the set of Shark Tank, he looks exactly like us. So rich people dress like lazy hipsters now. So there's no telling whether or not we got that cheddar.
Okay. And maybe
let's be fair about that.
Yeah, okay, that's true. And I did pull out a lens from my pocket.
as soon as I walked in.
You did, which immediately disarmed all of them, because I think they were curious about, like, do we have to sell them? And then you're like, I have this thing I could use assistance with. Immediately we're like, oh, cool, these fuckers aren't buying anything. We don't have to play the game.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
No, they were immediately, you're right, their guard went down. They were immediately interested in talking to us, like, oh, what you got? Let's take a look at it. Like, the way comic nerds geek over, like, old issues of stuff, you know, the old finds, like, apparently they don't get a lot of the old screw type lenses because they're so ancient that nobody uses them anymore. So they were, like, really, really excited about it.
That whole experience was great, because you walk in and there's two employees in there. There's a younger woman who both of them were dressed very well, because it is a very expensive store.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, she was very welcoming and friendly, and I could tell she was kind of the frontline salesperson that was there. And then there was a gentleman there who I'd say probably early 40s, maybe slender build, foreign accent. I couldn't really place what the accent was. Mm-hmm. But was clearly there for, like, either assistance or the hardcores. And if I had to guess, he's probably the store manager.
Yeah, I think I've seen video of him as the manager.
And you broke out that lens, and I swear I heard him say the model of the lens quietly under his breath when he saw it. Like, because I had this moment where I saw him, like, looking down at everything, you pulled it out, and he looked up, and he saw what you had, and I saw him do the same thing every old car guy does when he sees something that's real rare, uh-huh, where they're like, hang on, is that a Studebaker Avanti? I haven't seen one of those in forever. And you're like, what the fuck just stumbled out of his mouth? And then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, it was the first one that used a ball bearing turbo. It was the only one stateside. You're like, whoa, 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 what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah,
second you broke that lens out, he immediately was like, is that a yada yada? And then, like, broke out the fucking Leica Bible.
Yeah.
And then start flipping through the thing.
Yeah.
And it was manufactured, what was it, 1954?
Mm-hmm. The year right before they came out with the M mount, which is what they use for all their standard lenses now. But so, yeah, like, it was an interesting experience, because, like, you and me and Marty should not be there.
No.
Like,
no, they should genuinely, like, it'd be douchey of them to do, but I would totally understand if they were like, gentlemen, can we help you? You do understand how expensive these cameras are.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good day.
Yeah, get the fuck out.
And be like,
yeah,
okay, fair enough. But, yeah, like, it was definitely an interesting experience having him be like, yeah, no, we can service that. That's definitely something we could do. But, like, I swear he was a half step away from making you an offer.
I did hear the woman say, are you going to try to buy that thing?
Like, right. Yeah. Like, you can tell he popped up. He immediately became a car guy. And, like, I went from not really caring about this dude to immediately was like, one of us. I know this type. Yeah. I've seen that look. I know that look.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, it's got 15 aperture blades and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And like,
yeah,
he was holding it like I had handed him this precious stone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some old car guy shit. Mm-hmm. Like, you made that guy's day. I guarantee you, for the next 3 hours, he was Googling how much they were, what was going on with it. Probably asked her, hey, did you get his information or anything else like that? Like,
yeah.
I guarantee you go back in there and you actually go to get the thing serviced, there's a good chance he's going to make an offer.
Well, the nice thing, he gave me a couple of names of places that would service it for more affordable rates, because the Leica people will do it, but it'll cost as much as, like, the cameras will. So a couple thousand.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So the repair place that the two places that he recommended would do it for like $100.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I sent it out this week, to this place, in Massachusetts. It's just this guy who's been servicing Leicas for years, and he's just really good at it. And there are apparently three names in the Leica world of people who repair Leicas that aren't, you know, sending it to the Leica store because you have fuck you money.
Right.
So it was really cool. And then
that's cool. Also, can we mention that's real fucking rad of a dude who works at a store like that. Mm-hmm. That's somebody who really cares about the community of the thing that he works for.
Yeah.
That he's like, no, I totally understand. If you want some more reasonable pricing, there's a couple guys who are really trusted. These are the people that you should go to. This is a much more reasonable price, but you can totally trust. Like, I really appreciate a retail store, especially.
Yeah.
That makes its money selling cameras. That is like, no, that really old thing. That's cool. We totally understand. We want you to really be able to use it. Here are the people that we trust. Like, I kind of like that.
Yeah. And I wasn't expecting that level of generosity, or I don't even know what you call it, like old school salesmanship or whatever.
Right.
But that was really nice. And then after that, the hostess, the woman who was the younger woman, was like, well, do you guys want to see what they look like on the modern ones? And I was like, fuck yes. Fuck, fuck yes. So you go to a typical retail location, all the merch is out there for you to grab, pick up, and, you know, sniff and get your greasy hands all over. Like a store, everything is like a museum. It's behind glass.
Yes.
It's like red velvet case, nicely lit.
You need to be given the opportunity to enjoy and hang on to these sort of things. This is not the sort of place that you can do a quick smash and grab.
Yeah.
Like, they make that very clear, which I totally understand that. That makes sense.
Yeah. So we got to hold the modern version of my grandfather's camera, the modern version of the lens. It felt buttery smooth. The focus ring, the aperture, it was amazing. Like, I've never driven in a sports car, but I imagine that's what it feels like. I've never held a private stock PRS guitar, but I imagine that's what it feels like.
I've driven some really nice classic cars, and none of them are nearly as smooth as that Leica. I'm talking about your grandfather's lens by comparison. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the build quality that Leica has. Like, you joke around about, like, you know, classic German build quality and, you know, really nice Mercedes or really nice BMWs or whatever it is. Like, no. Yeah. We're beyond over-engineered. This is the sort of thing that, like, you find out that you fucked up this lens and it caused poor pictures because of poor manufacturing, there's a good chance a dude's just going to go out back with a revolver and manage himself. Like, there's a level of accountability as far as craftsmanship that is like, I don't know how you get into the Leica building apprenticeship program.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Like,
oh.
Because I've seen things like that. Like, I feel like there's got to be some sort of, like, video. Like, what is that one? The sushi one. Jiro Eats Sushi? Is that it?
Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Yes. Yeah. Where, like, you see the process of, like, dudes spending 7 years just making rice. Uh-huh. And, like, his son clearly being really – but, like, the years that you have to spend before, like – Hans decides to hand over the like tools that his grandfather's grandfather gifted to him.
Yeah.
Like, I assume it has to be a family thing. There's like six people on the planet who know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would love to see that video. Blows up and all of a sudden, like, there's, you got that dude in Connecticut who's suddenly like becomes the Highlander and is like, there must be another. And just like, like, just fucking fires Queen up, and all of a sudden the camera nerds come out of the woodwork.
Here we are.
Yeah.
And then she brought out the big gun, the 50 millimeter f.95. Holy shit, Brandon!
It's a $10,000 lens.
$10,000 lens.
I'm not even going to play around with it. It's 10 grand.
This big. Heavy like a motherfucker. Heavy like a like, you take my laptop and you take this lens. This lens weighs as much as my fucking laptop. Like,
I'd argue it weighs twice the amount of your laptop.
Yeah.
I could literally, Jamie, I could take a photo of a puma leaping at me, brain it with the lens,
yeah,
continue to brain it,
yeah,
and then pick it back up, put it back on the camera, and then continue to take photos, because it's heavy enough and the build quality is high enough, mm-hmm, that I genuinely think I could survive puma attack and still take $10,000 lens photo quality photos.
Oh my God.
Lord, what sort of fuck you money do you have that you're like, well, I could buy that needy family a used Honda Civic, but I got to take videos of my Pomeranian. Yeah. So
I got to get that 0.95.
I got to get that 0.95. Like, just nothing I can do about it.
And at 0.95, the only thing, the plane of focus is so thin that the only thing you're going to get is like one pore on like the tip of your nose. And the rest is just going to be like Boca City.
I have no idea what the purpose of that 0.95 is. Like, is it all macro shots? Is it like super distance stuff? So then it really is just a face and then like way blacked out in the background. Like, yeah. I assume it has to be for like runway shots or something.
I mean, you get it because it lets in more light, but you stop it down to something like a 2.8 and then it's really sharp. And then you compare it to another lens that's at 2.8. And because even at 2.8, it lets in more light. It's a sharper image. It's
okay.
A better bokeh quality in the background. Like it's right. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. So
I'm really sad that you didn't pick it up, and I understand why you didn't want to, but like,
no,
you and Marty were both like, no fucking way am I going to touch this thing.
No, there's a difference in between things that I could potentially see the difference in build quality of, and see like the Leica build quality is super smooth, and I could see me eventually wanting to pull the trigger on it, but probably never actually doing it unless I had real fuck you money.
Yeah.
Even then, even with fuck you money, like the idea of, because the lens, the cameras themselves are what, like $8,000-$9,000.
I have the website brought up in case we wanted to go there. La 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 la. Like a M camera starts at one. Okay, so our highest price is $13,950. Lowest price is $4,695.
Wait. So they have a $13,000 camera.
They do.
Okay, so in theory, let's say you got fuck you money that you're buying a $10,000 lens. So you're spending $23,000 on a camera and lens. $23,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, hang on a second. Let's see.
Cheapest one is like 27. Well, APS-C is like 2700, 2800.
So you could buy for that 4600 KFC $5 fill up box.
That's a lot of chicken.
You could feed a community college fried chicken. Just cause. For the cost of that camera.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Like, okay. So then divided by 3 equals 15. Okay. Divided by 365. Okay. So you could, in theory, if you had a KFC close enough, you could have a $5 fill-up box for every meal, 3 meals a day. For 4.2 years.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Like, I'm talking 4 years.
4 years of Phillips.
Fried chicken. Of mashed taters. of a delicious cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Of a savory Pepsi Cola drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, sky's the limit, by the way. And anything that you want, you could be like, you know what? I'm going back. It's Friday. It's Chicken Pot Friday. Uh-huh. And I'm going to go get myself a chicken pot pie. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to switch it up a little bit, have a little coleslaw, like a little light and tangy with my rich and creamy. And then I'm going to enjoy a brownie today. That's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to finish it off with an orange slice. And you know what the best part is? I've still got 4,199 meals left out of the $23,000 I spent on cameras.
But Brandon, you could just get a lens for $1,795. That gets you a 50mm f/2.4. Oh my god.
That's what I got here. I got it. It's $140.
Yeah. Actually, one of the repair places that I found, Sherry Crowder, she actually sells refurbished stuff that she's fixed up. And yeah, some of the lenses are actually pretty reasonable. They're old screw mounts, or some of them are older mounts like the one I have. But like there's a 50 f/3.5 for like $95.
Okay. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm sure in the secondary market, for the right kind of lenses, they are great. And I cannot argue with the idea that your camera lens is older than my house.
Yeah.
And is still functional.
Yeah.
So that's awesome and a testament to the build quality. I've got no argument there. However, mm-hmm. I cannot, in good conscience, do that.
I totally agree with you. Like, I totally agree with you.
Cannot. Also, you know, considering how expensive some of this stuff is, you'd think she'd have a nicer website.
Yeah, well, she's spending most of her time fixing the stuff. So I actually would prefer a shitty website. But if you scroll, down to some of those older lenses, I think they're pretty reasonable. And I know they work on Micro Four Thirds because that's how I've been using my grandfather's lens. So,
by the way, the idea of taking a shitty photo of a $1,000 Leica is really fucking insulting. Like,
it's funny.
Like, there's one here. It's a photo of the Leica M5. It's on the main page. It's $1,050. And generously, I would say it looks like an evidence photo to an old episode of Unsolved Mysteries. Like,
yeah.
It honestly looks like the sort of image that you would see on TV of an image of a photograph taken in 1995.
Yeah, that's funny.
Like,
yeah, but like that's when you know the person doesn't really need the website. They just have it there to have their contact information and just like, oh, here's some shit that I put up.
Ooh, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I don't know. Oh, okay. It doesn't actually. Okay, I get it. You see through the lens. Does it not have a viewfinder? I'm very confused by some of these older Leicas.
I can show you my grandfather's body. It is very difficult to figure out how to fucking use it. Like,
okay. Okay. That's fine. I'm assuming there's just no viewfinder on that. That's just how that works. $900, 19, 18. Those square cap front lenses that they carry.
Yeah.
Those are sexy as fuck.
Oh yeah.
They God, are. That design is sexy as hell.
Yeah. I wouldn't trust buying off of eBay for these types of lenses, type of lenses. But like from the repair shops, I feel like this woman knows what she's doing because she's one of three names that people talk about in the Leica community for like fixing their shit. So,
no, I mean, that makes sense. And that's awesome. Just, yeah, this is some rich shit that I just know.
Yeah.
Just know.
But they let us walk in there. They let us get our grubby, greasy hands on there, and they didn't treat us like we were the scum of the earth that we are, which impressed the shit out of me.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. It's always nice to walk into a store and not be treated like trash.
Like, I've been treated worse at comic book shops, and I'm the fucking target demographic.
Well, let's be clear here. In a comic book shop, I'm the target demographic, not you.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But like, yeah, if I go to a new comic book shop in a new city, I always get treated like shit. And I'm just like, come on, guys.
We've talked about this. Most comic book store owners are elitist douchebags who are more interested in long boxes than regular sales, and they have no perspective about how to run a retail business. They're just comic book fans who are like, I don't really know a ton of stuff about Robin's earlier work, so I should totally run a comic book store. Never mind understanding anything about retail or recycling inventory or product movement or trending sales or anything else like that. And I don't understand why my comic book store is failing, because I created such a great inventory. Fucking hell, Ronald. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Anyway, that I've got any hate on comic book store owners. That's not my life.
Yeah. But I guess the long or short of it is, go visit the Leica store. They won't treat you like shit. You will never be able to afford something in there. And if you get to the point where you can't afford something in there, you can buy a chicken instead for like your entire fucking city. So
yeah. Yeah. That's really what you should do. The kids, if there's anything that I can teach you, it's go buy chicken for everybody.
Yeah.
Like if you got Leica money, go buy chicken for everybody.
Man, if you've got Leica money, you can probably buy chicken for everybody and buy the Leica.
Yeah. You know, or you could pay your employees a decent wage.
Yeah.
See how we ended up bookending it there? Rich dicks.
All right, Brandon Chalmers. I think that's it.
Yep. 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 I've managed to bring the room down twice.
Where can people find you?
Fucking mission accomplished banner right over my head. They can find me on Instagram. Yep. At that guy Chalmers, and probably anywhere else. You can also find me coming up very soon at the Autobar for Super Art Fight. So Super Art Fight for all the tickets and details for that. Jamie Noguchi, where can they find you?
As well, you can find me at Super Art Fight on May the 15th.
That is correct, sir.
Yeah, May the 15th at the Auto Bar. Be there, be square.
Yeah.
And then you obviously found this podcast, so you know how to fucking find me.
Yeah, that's very true. But you guys should probably come to the show because it's going to be real good. And Jamie, well, we announced it at the show. And if you've watched this and you haven't seen the online announcement, because Marty probably hasn't done it yet, but I don't really care. Spoiler alert. Why not? You're going to be taking on a one... Baron von Sexifel?
I am. Baron von Glitterbutts.
It's been quite a long time since the two of you threw down.
Yeah, on stage. Like, we do away shows all the time, because usually it's just me and him.
Right.
But yeah, this is the first time in years that we've done it at the Auto Bar.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a good throwdown.
Yeah, it's Rock Hogan. It's Austin Michaels.
I don't want to be Hogan in this one.
it's Ollie Foreman. No, we can make Mike Hogan. It's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's fine. This is the Thrilla in Manila of Art Fight. This is the fight of fights. This is the one to see.
Yeah.
All other art fighters pale in comparison to the grand master that is my own close personal friend, because I am not a biased referee, Jamie Angry Zen Master Noguchi. You need to come see him take on Glitterbutt and cheer him to victory.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Yep. Yep. You kids should totally come out and see the thing. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. But yeah. Jamie, any parting words for everybody?
Thanks. And, you could buy us Leicas, and then that'll be great.
Okay, maybe we'll try this. Kids, go get a camera, because we've been doing this lately. Go out and take photos. If you want to come take photos with us, let us know. We're thinking about maybe getting some photo field trips together. Yeah. If you've got a place that you've been wanting to visit, museums, car shows, anything that you're into, state parks, whatever it is, let us know.
Yeah.
We would love to join you, come take a trip, go wander around, snap some photos. If you have zero experience taking photos, but you'd really like to, and you just want to take your phone, cool, come hang out with us.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing, so no judgments.
Right. That's the plus side, is bring a point and shoot, bring a real camera, bring your phone, bring whatever. But if you're interested in doing it and you're like, I really like to do this, but I really need to just force myself to go out, let us know.
Yeah.
We'll go out with you. And it's way better in a group.
Yeah.
When you see one person notice something, you suddenly have your eyes open to what other people are viewing in the world.
Yeah.
So having just that perspective of looking for things that you want to capture is a really interesting experience. You should try and do it with other people. It makes the whole process worlds more fun.
Yeah, city walking is a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I feel confident in saying, Jamie, walking around with you makes me a more confident photographer.
Oh, really?
I have no idea whether or not it makes me a better one, but I know walking around with you, I'm seeing your perspective plus my perspective, and it's forcing me to snap photos. If you're snapping photos, I'm like, what is he looking at? And then I'm finding something. Otherwise, I'm using it as an excuse to try and snap photos of you to work on my street photography or work on my portraits or anything. So there's always an opportunity to do that. And because you're out in a group of people, hopefully we can increase the amount of people. You also have consenting people who are letting you take photos, which means you don't get into that problematic thing of like snapping a photo of a random person on the street and then being like, why the fuck do you take my picture?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So you should come hang out with us and come do the thing. And I know there's a couple of people who have said that they really want to do it. And I'm telling you right now in no uncertain terms, please, genuinely, I don't care what kind of camera you have or if you don't have one at all.
Yeah.
Come hang out with us and come take photos. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy the thing.
We're learning a lot. We talk about it a lot, mostly because we don't know what we're doing. So and that's the fun of it. Like, you know, we're trying a whole bunch of different shit. So.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty, pretty easy to just kind of out say, I don't think Jamie and I are super interested in being super nerdy, know everything camera people. So I don't think you'll ever get that thing. A bit of understanding would be awesome, but we're not going to get lost in anything. And we're running completely different sets of gear with different manufacturers and different everything. Mm-hmm. So there's no judgment about what kind of camera you have. Yeah. We're not elitist people when it comes to that stuff either. So come hang out with us. It'll be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yep. Camera time. Plus,
then we can go get a Korean barbecue.
Oh, fuck. I'll fuck that up.
Yep. Yeah, you will. Yeah, we'll dig into that. And if we can't, because like we decided to make it a dog field adventure or something like that, we'll go get barbecue anyway and then just eat it outside with dogs. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep. We'll do the thing. But yeah, kids, go explore the world.
All right, y'all.